Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
News Radio 930 WBEN. It's Tom Bowerly and David Bellavia. It's Bowerly and Bellavia on News Radio 930 WBEN.
Michael Caputo joins us. He's on the hotline. He interviewed Chris Collins today. And a lot of folks calling in want to talk to you. Also want to get your overall opinion. I know it sounds absurd to say now, but this idea that somehow New York 27 can literally be the difference between the Speaker Pelosi or Speaker McCarthy or whoever the Republicans decide to replace Speaker Ryan. Michael Caputo, who joins us from what is your podcast called, Michael?
Stillstandingradio.com.
That's right. Stillstandingradio.com. I apologize. Michael, what are the chances that New York 27 it comes down to the one or two or three races that make the difference?
I think it's a very good chance. I think this could be the majority could be determined by just a handful. We all thought that there was going to be a blue wave, that everybody was talking about it, especially the national networks. And then came the con job they pulled on Brett Kavanaugh to destroy him, destroy his career, destroy his family, to encourage threats against his wife and children. Americans pushed back on that. It became very clear that the Democrats overplayed their hand, and polls show, honest polls, forget about the CNN polls and others, honest polls show that the Democratic wave has evaporated. And in fact, another important aspect, which is, as you know, very important, the enthusiasm gap has evaporated. Up until the Kavanaugh confirmation process, the Democrats' intensity index was at about 85%, and Republicans were at about 68%. That's a big gap, a very big one. And on the midterm elections, when the sitting president's party is expected to lose the House of Representatives, that gap is really where your problem lies. But now, there is no enthusiasm gap. The intensity of both parties is equal. The Democrats have not lost any enthusiasm, but the Republicans have gained an intensity. And now I think the Democrats' generic ballot is probably still a 4-point advantage, but the intensity gap has evaporated, and the momentum is on the Republican side. However, we now know there's no blue wave, but I can promise you there's no red wave. And when you have this even-Steven kind of a situation in a midterm prospect, you're looking at basically a fistfight in about 35 to 40 congressional districts. And I'm on a conference call every morning and every evening, 8:30 and 5:30, with the midterms project being run by Steve Bannon and his team. And we go through briefings on every single congressional district that we consider to be up in the air. And I have to give a briefing on New York 27 on a regular basis now. That wasn't happening before these charges were launched against Congressman Collins. And if New York 27 is a point of concern, and you know Real Clear Politics calls it a toss-up, I'm not sure it's a toss-up, but it's in danger. If New York 27 is on the map of toss-up districts, then we have to be very concerned about what's happening in Congressman Collins' race.
Well, outside of Taylor Swift endorsing Nate McMurray.
Well, that had a big impact in Warsaw, I'm sure.
I'm sure. Hey, let's go back to the phones and go to Frank in Williamsville. Frank, you're on with Michael Caputo. Go ahead.
Yeah, I've been watching over the last few weeks the confirmation hearings for Kavanaugh and then this whole thing with Collins, and I always, how low can it go? You know, can it get any lower? I mean, with Collins, it's like it's like the guy coming out of the bank robbery that's got the blue dye all over his hands, and people are saying, well, he's got to get, his presumption of innocence. I mean, people to vote for Collins and hope they know it's just, this whole thing with the swamp is just—it's gotten worse since Trump's been around. I'm a independent, leading conservative person, and I got to say that when people say to me, "Oh, those Republicans—they only care about the rich and the rich buddies, the top 1%ers," and then Collins does it. How can you argue against them? I mean, it's like the guy got caught red-handed. If you look at the information that's available, the logs for the cell phones, et cetera, to have to like hold your nose and vote for this guy, I'm sorry. We need to come up with some better people somehow. The system's broken.
You know what? That's a fair challenge. We've heard that. Frank, Frank in Williamsville, thank you. You know, Michael, here's the thing. There's going to be people that are going to be upset about either the process or the fact that we're here. But again, in order for this to go the way the Collins needs it to go, there have to be more people that see things differently than Frank in Williamsville, which is this is big picture, you know. And I guess how do you address that? How do you say, well, you know, whatever happens down the road, Collins is going to eventually sit down with the media? I mean, how does he run a race and not answer tough questions outside of Channel 4?
First of all, wasn't that Frank in Warsaw? I'm not trying to be a jerk. I mean, it's important to me to know whether it's Williamsville or Warsaw.
I thought it was. It said Williamsville on the screen.
Okay.
Yeah.
Here, and what Frank is saying is really important to understand, to acknowledge, and to deal with in a race like Congressman Collins is running. And as someone who is outside that campaign and who backs Congressman Collins, I can tell you my concern is 100%. For the color, the shade of the district, 100%. Listen, David, you and I talked about the kind of candidates we get over and over again. We've talked about this ad nauseum since 2012, David. You and I both know we can't even say on the air the things that we've said to each other. What kind of candidates the Republican Party recruits across the country is a challenge for everyone. But it's not an unusual issue. It's one that the Democrats have had as well. We have to encourage more people like Frank, to run for office. And the issue we have in politics is that we need campaign finance reform in some form.
Well, also, though, who really has the intestinal fortitude to stand up to a Kavanaugh screening or even, you know, what Collins is enduring right now? This can't be easy for him. At the same time, I don't know how he is able. What would you advise if you were advising a candidate in a situation? You had a guy who was being charged as he was running, held a seat, went back for that seat downstate. You know, what do you tell these guys when it comes to the media? I mean, because there is a legitimate argument that Collins is making that if I talk about this case, it's going to be used against me somehow. Right.
True. And I think also what kind of a person runs and can do this. It's not just that you have to have balls to face this, the scrutiny and the how they're going to run your family down. I don't care if you're an angel or a devil, but you also have to have bucks. It's balls and bucks. And that's the problem with our system, the bucks part. If you aren't independently wealthy, you can't. It's very difficult to run for office. Ask Nate McMurray. Right.
Right.
In addition to that, it's. You can't, if you don't have the money to defend yourself when you're facing an onslaught like Chris Collins is, I can tell you if Chris Collins was a steel worker, he wouldn't be in this race. You know that. And I think that, you know, if I were managing this race, I'm not.
Right, but how do you deal with the media?
You stay away from them completely. You only go to the media who you feel you can have a civil conversation with. You cut a deal with the person who's interviewing, you can say, look, I am not able to talk about the charges against me, and if you ask me three questions where I have to say I can't answer that on the advice of my attorney, I'm ending the interview.
Right.
Because
that takes a whole team to be able to do that. I want to go back to the phones. Carol on a cell phone, you're on with Michael Caputo. Go ahead, Carol.
Hi. I'm glad you took my call. I listened to Michael this morning, as usual. My question for everybody involved is, if Chris Collins gets the nomination or gets through and he wins, And something else happens. Let's say he gets indicted and he gets thrown in jail. Does not the Republican Party have the right to put a Republican in his spot to replace him?
No, in the House, the People's House, the only way to get a representative is to have an election. You can't be appointed a congressman.
For election?
There would have to be a special. You know, Carol, that's an excellent question. Let me go to Michael. Thank you, Carol, for calling in. Michael, this is, I think, something that Collins needs to address during the election, during this campaign, which is what happens after you elect Chris Collins as congressman? That's a fair question.
It is a fair question. It is a special election. One, the governor has the power to call, or he could call it right away to make it happen. He could call it far down the road and leave New York 27 without a representative. And that's something, a political question the governor has to answer. But it is a special election that's open to all parties.
But the reality, Michael, is that his trial could actually be in the fall of next year. He could serve for a year and a half.
He could. And, you know, it could be summer, it could be fall. Late summer, fall. And I'm not quite certain if I were managing Chris's race, if I would tell him he had to address this. I would ask for third parties and surrogates to address it. I would ask for, and nobody on my campaign should address it.
Wow. Michael, I want to get back to that. Michael, you know, you're saying if you were advising Collins, you wouldn't even touch that issue.
He needs to do exactly what he's doing and attest to his own innocence. And I think perhaps say it even louder than he is nowadays. I gave him the opportunity to say it a couple of times on the 26-minute interview we did. I think he probably has to say it louder and more often. I remember Michael Grimm, David, you know, the former congressman
right.
from Staten Island. He's a friend of mine. And he was indicted and tried while he was while he was running for re-election, and he connects, I mean, I know the guy well, he connects directly pupil to pupil with his voters, and his voters thought he got railroaded. I think he did. He was found guilty for something that is normally a civil fine for having a couple of dishwashers off the books in his restaurant, the first restaurateur in the history of New York City to be prosecuted criminally on it. And he looked right in the eye to eye with every one of his constituents as he was running for re-election and said, I am innocent and I am going to fight these charges. And then after he was re-elected strongly in his district by those constituents, he folded up and pled guilty and walked away. Now, they made him pay for that when he tried to run again. But my point is this. Michael Grimm is a different kind of congressman than Chris than Chris Collins. Michael Grimm was an emotional guy, a visceral guy. He connected with people at the gut level, and he loved campaigning door-to-door. That's not the kind of campaigner Chris Collins is. I don't think he can talk about what will happen if what he believes, his innocence, is not proven. I think he has to talk only about his innocence and let outsiders, surrogates, like, let's say, Chairman Nick Langworthy of the Erie County Republican Party, talk about what happens in the technicalities.
Excellent stuff. Michael Caputo, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate that. We will talk again, and good job on the interview today. That was Michael Caputo, and you can go to Still Standing Radio to find out more about Michael Caputo. As if there's anything else we need to know. I'm going to switch gears. We'll still take your calls if you want to call in, hold on over the break on Collins. We're also tracking 140-mile-an-hour Hurricane Michael. It is still a life-threatening storm surge, and it is a Category 4. It has hit land, and it is moving northeast, and hopefully will peter out a great deal, and it'll drop down to what we hope is more manageable winds at 50 or 40 miles an hour. But right now, it is still considered to be not only a deadly storm, but the storm surge will be life-threatening. And we hope for the best of the people that stayed behind there at Hurricane Michael. You know, there was an article in Market Watch yesterday, 2 days ago, and it was a topic that I think is one of the greatest things I'd ever come across. You work with men and you work with women. At the workplace, this article cites a study that shows that women volunteer, according to the Harvard Business Review, a study that was published in 2017 refers to office housework or non-promotable tasks. Things like cleaning up all the mugs from the break room, taking the garbage out, cleaning up the dishes, ordering, maybe there's a birthday party for the office or where you work. The woman does the planning. They're finding that women volunteer for non-promotable tasks and women do more office housework at the workplace, at the office. And in a world where everyone's talking about gender equality and workplace parity when it comes to pay, they want everyone to get the same amount of money for the same work that's done. That's the American way. That seems like a fair system to me. You don't pay someone less because of, you know, religion or sexuality or what gender they are, right? But why do we still make women do non-promotable tasks and office housework? In your office, at where you work, do the women do the housework of the office? What is that, laundry? Listen, I've got a big presentation to give Friday. Phil, you're going to be bringing the donuts and coffee. And Sean, I want you to make sure that there's a good meeting place at the hotel that we can do. And Sarah, make sure all of our pants are ironed. Do that for us. That'd be great. Make us some soup. While the men think about what to do today, you can make us a nice, hearty turkey chili. That's what we would like. Welcome back to Bowerly and Bellavia. Tom is off today. He'll be back tomorrow. You know, there was an article in Market Watch. It quotes a study that was done at the Harvard Business Review, a study that found that women, they volunteer at work for non-promotable tasks. They call it office housework. Women at work will do menial household chores and men won't do them. And so this study that was paid for by the, what is it, the executive, the Forte Foundation, a nonprofit in San Antonio, Texas. They said, the authors of this paper said, across field and laboratory studies, we found that women volunteer for non-promotable tasks more than men. What is field and laboratory studies? This was done in a strip mall in West Seneca. Well, who are you kidding? Laboratory studies. As if they had people in like a sterile room wearing gowns. There is a clogged sink over here. And there's papers that need to be filed. Who's going to do that? I guess my question here, that they quote that advice for women in the workplace is that if you're going to do 10% extra work and it's not going to help you advance or get a raise, don't do it. Well, only I work with women. I work with men. I have never seen, I don't find this to be true in my work environment. I don't know about yours. I'd like to hear from you. 803-0930, star 930, 1-800-616-WBN. You can text us on the Volkswagen of Orchard Park text board 30930. Do women at the workplace tend to volunteer for non-promotable tasks or office housework? So if like the toilet's clogged, you send in Linda from accounting and say, hey, there's a plunger. Make sure it doesn't leak on the way back, eh? Put a bag under it. What are you doing? Office, I would never, like the garbage, for example. If there's anything, I don't ask, you know, women to do that stuff because I don't know. I maybe I'm sexist in the opposite way. I'm like one of the guys, grab the garbage and put it out. You know, it's heavier. It's chivalry, is it not? But when it comes to making a lasagna, no, but again, though, I don't know. Women in the workplace are volunteering for non-promotable tasks. Now, in the military, everyone gets volunteered for non-promotable tasks. You don't even have a choice. You just get thrown out there, and that's the way it's done. But if women volunteer for these jobs at higher rates than men, and, for example, these are tasks that include holiday parties, taking notes at meetings, ordering office supplies, and serving on low-level, meaningless committees. First of all, if your job has low-level, meaningless committees, if that is like a ledger, that's one of the columns in your thing. Hey, listen, Joe, I want you to take over planning for our supply distribution center. And Sheila, I want you to work on the low-level, meaningless position. We're trying to get rid of our squirrels in the backyard. Maybe you can get on that, hold a couple meetings, take some notes. Low-level, meaningless committees. Women seem to be lousy all over that. They love it. Give me as much low-level, meaningless stuff. So the argument is, why would you volunteer to do something that's not going to help you get promoted? No one ever says, hey, whoever unclogged that toilet and bathroom two upstairs, thank you. That guy put him in for a raise. The argument here is that if you do meaningless things, you're looked at as, you know, not being essential to the bottom line. What do you think about that? 803-0930, star 930. 1-800-616-WBEN. You can text us on the Volkswagen of Orchard Park text board 30930. Let's go to the phones. Peter in St. Catharines. Do you find in your workplace that women volunteer for office housework?
David, thank you for this call. No, I don't. And I don't know where they did that study from. I would actually argue that that might even be a bogus kind of study, and I wanted to introduce some figures to you, some data that you could first wrap our heads around, and it debunks this issue about this wage gap between men and women. Look, there's data in the United States when we track it from the 1950s all the way up to today that shows that. It's very interesting. If you took a African-American male and his African-American wife, both college educated, same level of education, and you pair them against a white male with a white wife, college educated, on par with each other, both two groups, the same, and you track them across time, the black couple makes about 2,000 US more a year. Wage gap doesn't exist. The problem is the critical mass of that black couple, that highly educated, college-educated black couple, is not as much, so you don't see it. Also, when we look at women and men across America, college-educated, women who have not left the workplace and have remained in their work job consistently for 30 to 40 years, and you look at that woman, compared to her male counterpart, same level education, it always turns out the data falls apart and the woman makes about 1,000 US more a year. There's no wage gap. The difference really is when you keep married women in that equation. Once you take married women out, that is women who've had to have left the workforce to tend to the kids, tend to the home, and she re-enters and loses traction and stuff. I admit that that does happen. But that's just the cost of marriage, that's the cost of life, and the cost of the species. But there is no wage gap. And you pull married women out of it, a woman who began childbirth very early, like in their teen years, or single woman, then you would have a wage gap. So it depends on how you look at the data and how you break the data apart.
You know, it always is the case, Peter. Great talking with you. Hope you're well. Thank you, Peter, in St. Catharines. Appreciate that. Let me go to Justine in Cheektowaga. They interviewed one of the participants in this report, this survey that says, Harvard Business Review, that women tend to do more household chores at work than men do. And one of the women that was interviewed from Brooklyn said, quote, "It's kind of an unspoken understanding that I clean up after everyone at work. I clean up after everyone's workstations when they're done. I frequently are left dishes and glassware that I have to clean up after others." Justine in Cheektowaga, has this happened to you?
Yeah, I think it's kind of like at home where if you see something and it bothers you, you just address it. So if I open up the community refrigerator at work and it's got a funk, I'll send an email out to all the staff saying, the refrigerator's getting funky, guys. Either get your stuff out of here by noon tomorrow or I'm just going to throw it out.
Entercom has like a general Pinochet policy about the fridge. If you left something over there, the next night it's tossed. They don't even mess around.
Yeah.
But you find that it's just that, listen, you have your own little, you know, things that drive you crazy. And if you don't do it, nobody else is going to do it.
Yeah, that in the sink. You know, everybody washes their dishes or rinses their dishes. And, you know, if I'm microwaving my lunch and I notice the sink's a little bit nasty, I'll pull out the cleaner and clean it. And like I said, it might not bother anybody else, but I see it.
Can you just tell me how many women to men? What's the ratio at your office?
We actually have more women in all of the supervisory positions, and I am in a supervisory position. All of the supervisors in our office are women.
Do you find, though, that, I mean, listen, you could say that, you know, more women might do this or men might do that, but there are very lazy women and there are very clean men.
I will tell you, the ladies' room, and this is not the only place I've seen it.
Exactly.
Are disgusting.
Thank you. It is the women's room in an office with a men and a women's room. The women's room looks like there was a struggle in there.
Yeah, and I mean, I've worked in another place. I actually worked in a supermarket overnight, and I would use the men's room because it would always be cleaner than the ladies' room. It was a
That is something. Yeah. That's really telling right there, and that comes from a woman. So we've confirmed that Justine is telling the truth. Hey, Justine, thank you for the call. Appreciate that. We're asking the question. She's on Cheektowaga. We're asking the question of, do you find that women are asked to do household chores at work more than men are? And I just found this study out of the Harvard Business Review, non-promotable tasks. They're talking about people that plan holiday parties or take notes at meetings, ordering office supplies, or serving on low-level, meaningless committees, which I think would be one of my favorite memos to get. By the way, I'll be hosting another low-level, meaningless committee after work, 5:30 in the break room. Low-level, meaningless. So in this rating period, David, you've been in charge of four meaningless committees. Two of them were low level. One of them was mid-level meaningless. Meaningless. That's really funny. Someone just wrote in that I don't let women clean up my office because there's no way a woman can do a better job than a man at cleaning an office. Well, there's the problem right there. We're talking about a study done in the Harvard Business Review that find that women do office housework more than men do. Women volunteer for non-promotable tasks. They do more work and don't get paid for it or promoted for it or even appreciated for it. Imagine that. We're talking about holiday parties, who plans them, who volunteers to take notes at meetings, ordering office supplies, or serving, and this is my favorite, on low-level, meaningless committees. I just love that someone is like, someone's coming up with committees and considers them to be, well, we got the high-level committees. These are the gears and the teeth. This is how we make our money, people. Mid-level committees, you guys are ordering supply. You're making sure that the insurance gets paid and withholdings and everything. And the low-level guys, you know, you just make sure that the filter gets changed on the AC. But then there's low-level meaningless people. You come in every room and make sure, you know, it smells okay. Make sure the keyboards are functioning. The batteries on the mouse are up to par. Meaningless committee. That's pretty funny. At any rate, we're talking about, we'll take your calls, 803-0930, star 930, 1-800-616-WBEN. At the top of the hour, we're going to have another follow-up on the Chris Collins interview with Michael Caputo. We're going to hear from Howard Owens from the Batavian. That is a blog. It really gives the newspaper out there in Genesee County a run for their money. Howard Owens famously was the guy in the Collins press conference in August when he announced that he had, he made his first press conference after being indicted and arrested. It was Howard Owens that was like, hey, I drove all the way out here from Batavia. Answer a question. Well, Howard Owens has decided that he is no longer going to run any press release that Chris Collins gives the Batavian until he sits down with the Batavian. That's pretty controversial stuff. Howard Owens will be joining us at 5:07, and we'll talk to him. And we'll also take your calls on women doing office housework at the office, non-promotable tasks that women do. I don't see, a lot of these things that people volunteer for, I would never want to be responsible for a holiday party. That's a nightmare to me. Nobody's happy, you know? But we did hear something meaningful. Justine and Cheektowaga called in, and she said that the women's rooms were far nastier. Hazmat condition, I believe she gave it a 2. Then the men's restrooms, you always get the idea that men are gross and sloppy and dirty and they don't clean up after themselves. I've heard that all of my life. And yet it turns out that the women at the workplace, what, do they keep their homes really clean and then just say, hey, I'm at work, you clean it up, you know? All the nasty garbage on the ground and all that other stuff that's going on there. Anyway.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.